Welcome to the Draft Champions podcast. We're here today with a champion, the DC champions. I know I didn't even put the pieces together until now. The 2022 Draft Champions champion, Steve Mayer. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, sir.
How are you doing,
Zach?
How are you? I'm great. Thanks for coming on. And story behind this. So I reached out to Steve. I asked Derek for his number and he obliged. And I asked Steve to come on the podcast and I said to him, you know what, listen, like these things work really well with three people. That's advice that I got from Gecko, because when I asked him to come on, he's like, get somebody else. So we got DuPont. So here I asked Steve, I said, what analysts in the community or whatever that you like to, would you want to come on with? And he said, Russell Withers at Armchair Roto. Russell, what's up? You've been, what's the word? Selected?
It is my honor to have been picked out of a huge community of esteemed analysts to come on and provide some fake expertise on the Draft Champions podcast.
All right. Don't beat yourself up too much, but thank you, Steve, for coming on. And we also got Graham here. Don't want to forget him, my buddy from Canada.
Co-host.
What's up, Graham?
I'm good. I'm three's the perfect number, so four is a crowd, and let's do this.
Yeah, you're just here.
I'm hanging out.
So Steve, I put in the agenda, no one cares about your personal life or how you got into fantasy or your stories about like your favorite game of all time. So Steve, you got less than 1 minute to talk about yourself or anything you want to say. And I'm gonna cut you right off.
No, man, long time listener, first time caller. Glad to be here.
Awesome. No, so you're from Wisconsin. I saw Greg said you're a fellow Brewers fan.
Yeah, that's right.
That's so you right. Got you, John Fish, who also are all the NFBC guys, Ambrosius. So, you're one of them. And how long have you been playing NFBC?
Yeah, I think it's been about 7 years now. I think, they have the good statistic page you can look up. I had some real forgettable years in there, but 2016 kind of broke in. Humble right. Beginnings.
So without further ado, you won the overall contest. You just edged out another guy that was on the podcast just recently is Mike Mager, one of the best players, one of the best draft champions players in the world. I'd say him and Steve Weimer for longevity and everything. They're probably the two that have the best resume in history, I would say. And that's just me doing my just ad hoc analysis, but it doesn't mean much. But Steve, you won the championship last year. You had an amazing team. I posted that team on you. You don't have Twitter. And I posted that team sort of advertising this podcast. And just to run through, just people that didn't see that, the players that you had selected post round, like post 400, and we're going to look at the, we're going to draft a post 400 team. Round 29, Stephen Kwan. Round 31, Ronzi Contreras. But everything after that, you had Kyle Wright, you had Andres Munoz, Daniel Bard, Jorge Lopez, Yon Duran, Ryan Helsley in round 44, Jake McCarthy in round 46, Vinny Pasquantino in round 49, Jose Leclerc in round 50. And I feel like I'm even missing some players. I know you hit on Jeremy Pena, and we're going to talk about this throughout the podcast. So everyone looked at that and just they said, this is crazy. This is like the most ridiculous run in particular for the closers. And we'll get into it. So I guess just what are your thoughts on just basically, I don't know. It reminds me of that clip that Bill Burr had, the comedian. He's like, he's talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's like, why wouldn't he think he could bang the nanny? Because this guy's been in the zone for like 40 years. He's like, becomes Mr. Olympia, comes over, marries royalty, blah, blah, blah. Why wouldn't he think he could do that? But basically, like, you were in the fucking zone for like 30 rounds. So just talk about that, first of all.
Yeah, it feels like I may have used my one time on the river. I feel like I'm done. That may have been very well been my one time. It's a once in a lifetime thing. I mean, out of all the entries, I was in there six times, and thank goodness you're not showing the other five rosters, because they would be abysmal. But it just the puzzle pieces fit together. it's one of those things where you're kind of targeting a guy, you're waiting patiently for that 30 picks to go through to come roll around again. And it was one of those times where I just wasn't getting sniped. You know, things were coming through for me, and I don't know, puzzle pieces fit together once in a lifetime.
Yeah, man, like for sure. Like, but the thing is, and this is not something I really had on the agenda, but drafting in these overall competitions, it's like, yeah, people say like, yeah, that look, I screwed up my other teams. I had a couple bullets in this contest, but you're drafting with that in mind. You're not drafting to win your league. You're drafting to win the overall. It's sort of the same conversation I had with Bob Cramitola when he won the main event. Yeah, he had some fucking shitty main event teams as well, but that's part of the whole strategy. So just because you have some crap teams in the contest with a winning team, I don't think that's anything that takes away from the fact that you won it. Like, not significantly. Like, I guess you'd probably get more clout if you had that one bullet and you won it. But I don't think it's a bad thing because it's all part of the strategy. So before we get into the specifics of the draft champions, I want to talk about some global trends. And I post this and I'm like, this is sort of something that's interesting. Just global trends that that have like stuck out since 2015 to 2022. And we're seeing the strikeout rate go up. You're seeing pitchers throw harder. You're seeing slider usage go up. So there's been like an overall pitch mix change, like on a global level, on a macro level. And you're seeing barrels, hard hit, exit velocity all go up, but at the same time, average and slugging going down. So what, if anything, let's start with Russell here. What, if anything, can you like infer based on like these sort of trends that we're looking at?
Yeah, I thought the table you posted on Twitter was really interesting. So I actually went back and looked even farther. So there are a few things I noticed. If you look at, fastball velocity, slider velocity, and even changeup velocity over the last 20 years. And all three of them have a very significant, steady trajectory upwards. So I looked at league average pitch velocity for these types of pitches. So in 2002, the average fastball velocity was 89. And last year it got all the way up to 93.6. And there wasn't a blip. It either went up or stayed the same every time. And the same is true for sliders and changeups. I think that it just sort of reflects a few different things. One, just how specialized teams are getting in terms of how they select pitchers and use pitchers, utilize pitchers, what roles they put them in. If a starter isn't going to work out as a starter, they're much quicker to yank that starter and put them in the bullpen. And you can actually see that in a bunch of different places. There's this completely unrelated article I posted on my website about quality starts, because I hate quality starts. It maps out starter wins versus reliever wins. And over the same time period, you can see starter wins trending down steadily and reliever wins trending up steadily. And so relievers are being utilized more often, and they pitch a lot harder. They come in, they gas out, and then they're done. So it's, you look at all that and you see interesting things like batters are striking out more, but also getting better at their quality of contact. I think that what has happened with the pitchers has forced teams to weed out batters a lot quicker. So, you know, striking out a lot used to be frowned upon, but over time, it's now totally fine to strike out a lot if you make really good quality of contact when you hit the ball. So that's why you're seeing this steady upwards trend in strikeout rates at the same time that you're seeing quality of contact increase as well. So they're hitting the ball less, but they're hitting it a lot better. And I just think this is a global trend on both the pitching and the hitting side of everything just getting better. Teams are just getting better at improving players, finding what works, and putting the right things out on the field.
No, that's a good point. I know the more relievers is an obvious point that is happening, and you connected the dots, which I didn't. That's a good point. Steve, do you have any thoughts on this?
I was just admiring the happy the happy fun ball from 2019 there, how it kind of broke the trend briefly. But yeah, it's thanks for breaking that down, Russell. I'm with you.
Yeah, to add to what Russell's saying, a really interesting thing that I think, especially with like quote market, like there are no small market teams, right? Like they play poor, but like, and operate within budgets, but like a run saved is equal to a run scored, right? So you can, but it's significantly cheaper to pay for defense than it is to pay for offense. So you can kind of see that too with the declines, I think, across like batting average and slugging. And I mean, like a guy like Jose Siri, like the Rays go out and spend on him. I think he epitomizes this.
Yeah.
Because like that guy barrels the fuck out of the ball. He strikes out like crazy and he plays elite center field defense. Like this is just kind of where the game's going, right?
That's it's
sort of an arms race.
That's a really insightful point, actually. That's perfect. That's so perfect. It's sort of like when the Jays traded for Eric Swanson, you can't understand it, but you're seeing the relievers are getting used more and it fits the whole narrative of all the, of where the game's headed.
Yeah.
And speaking of this, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to add, I mean, I know that we're going to talk about the rule changes, but I think that this is the reason that MLB is putting these rule changes in, because these trends are so steady and there's no sign of it slowing down at all. So that's why we're getting these drastic rule changes, because they don't want the game to turn into where this is going.
Right. And I was going to get into the rule changes, but you know what, I'm going to stop myself and ask, because a lot of the times you talk about these things and then you forget to talk about how they're applicable to the game we play, the fantasy game. So, and I honestly can't even think of anything off the top of my head. How do you apply these trends into your strategy this year? So yeah, strikeouts are going to go up. Maybe with the shift and everything, like strikeout pitchers become more valuable. How would you, if you could pick one thing about this, how would you apply this into gaining an edge for this year? Anyone? I know that's a tough question.
For me, I just incorporate it into my projections so that I don't have to really think about it when I'm drafting.
Well, what did you incorporate? That answers the question then. If you tell me what you would incorporate.
Okay.
That's the application.
Yeah. Some of this is kind of rudimentary, but in terms of the shift, you know, I have a pretty basic projection system. It's kind of like I describe it as kind of a Marcel plus. It's just weighted averages. I throw some extra stuff into the soup. But what I did this year was I added for hitters and batting average, I added pull rate, ground ball rate, and I looked at how often they pull ground balls into play for hits that didn't go for outs. And then based on a couple of different ways of looking at it, I chose a percentage of those outs that I thought would go for hits next season. And I just applied that to all the hitters all the way on down. So if you had a higher pull rate and a higher ground ball rate, I just assumed that those players were going to get just a slightly better hit rate. And so that automatically translates to batting average. And it didn't increase things as much as you might think. I don't have the changes in front of me, but you know, for I think some of the most extreme changes, I think were, you know, like 8 to 9, 10 points in batting average. But I don't think it's going to make as much of a difference as people think it's going to, because it's a tie that lifts all boats. I mean, every player pulls balls and hits ground balls, even if they don't have high rates. So I think the way that it worked out for me was every player saw something from a 2 to 3 to 8 to 9% and point increase in batting average.
Right. And what about WHIP, the converse?
Yeah, this was an even more basic change. So I just looked at how many more balls I expected in play to go for hits, And I just sort of did a blanket small increase to ERA and WHIP. So it's not super scientific. I just factored it in.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about these new rules. So like, Steve, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. I have six new rules listed, or like I guess the impact, six impacts of the new rules. So one would be the pitch clock on stolen bases. One would be the pitch clock on pitchers, so tempo. Another one would be base sizes. The fourth one would be the shift impact on hitters, then the shift impact on pitchers, and then the balance schedule. So if you were to rank those 1 to 6 in terms of their impact on fantasy, how would you rank them, Steve?
The one I'm most interested in is the pitch clock on the pitchers, you know, messing up their rhythm and their, as you say, tempo. Maybe even so more so on the closers. You know, Kenley Jansen is known to be slow. It's very painful to watch Gallegos pitch. You know, I don't know what kind of effect this is going to have on these guys. You know, you can only throw to the base certain times. On the base stealing type stuff, I think that might ramp up for the good stealers. The rabbits stop the hop.
there you go.
Base sizes, you know, shift impact on hitters. You know, you got the Carlos Santana who shifted all the time. Maybe just the left-handed power guys. I don't know if anything can save Joey Gallo, but you know, so I guess ranking it, the pitch clock on the pitcher, you know, the shift impact on the pitcher. So I'm worried about pitch stuff. Base sizes. I don't know. I guess for me, it's the pitcher stuff.
Right.
To grips with, I feel like it might be a little bit like the Wild West. We have no idea what pitchers are going to be affected by that.
Which one are you least worried about, or not worried about? Which one do you think has the least impact? If you had to pick one of those six, which one are you going to spend
the balance schedule to?
Which one are you going to spend the least time in terms of your prep on?
I don't know, base sizes. I mean,
yeah.
Again, I don't know if you're a bad base stealer. I don't know if anything can help you. You know, I mean, they talk about the mid range guys. You know, the guy that gets 8 might get 12. You know, stuff like that. But I'm fascinated in just the tempo stuff. Who's going to be screwed up unexpectedly by that? Especially if you're a veteran and you've pitched for many years, is this something that's going to rock your world?
Right. All right, Graham. I want to hear your thoughts on this. Like maybe you just you don't need to go get into a lot of detail, but what are your thoughts in terms of like your priorities?
So from a fantasy perspective, I think if you're a person who looks at projections, the schedule doesn't matter because projections already have that, right? So if you're going to weigh that in your head on top of projections, you're double counting. So like, get rid of that thought.
Wait. I don't think that some of the projections, I don't think are counting for a lot of this though.
Like for the schedule, they are.
Oh, for the schedule. Like, I'm sorry.
I was just looking at the points, point by point.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said, I thought you were talking in general. My bad.
Go on. Yeah. In generalities, my thought is that baseball is moving towards like athletes. They want athletes on the mound and they want athletes at every position. So how I'm approaching this is I'm trending my biases and my picks of my drafting towards athletic players. Like I would prefer, like yeah, want, I, just, it's, the... I would prefer that this is stupid, but there are two players in my head. I would prefer Hunter Green to Lance Lynn. Just like complete opposites, but just like I want the athlete.
I want the hot body.
I want the Jose Miranda. He's looking sexy. Like, yeah that's, and then I think,
Where's Bjorn?
I think that's the generalities that I'd be looking at it with. I think the 4 inches or whatever on the base size, I don't think that matters.
Yeah,
I saw some interesting stuff. You tweeted a stuff out ages ago about that, where you broke it down like microsecond by microsecond or something. And it there's lots of bang bang plays, and it'll basically just change the bang bang plays for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know if my math was completely accurate, but it was directional.
But then I saw something similar So when you see like Kyle Boddy was tweeting that like the best way to stop people from stealing bases is by getting the ball to the plate quicker. So it goes back to athletes, right? Like I want pitchers who can maintain their velocity through their windup and everything consistently so that they don't need to take breaks. Like that's where the game's going, right? Like they've got the clock in so that like if you want to throw 95, 96 for like the duration of your start, like you got to be in shape, man.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Great. Russell, any thoughts here? Want to do a ranking?
I mean, I already mentioned that some of these changes are sort of a rising tide that lifts all boats, affects more players than others. But I think as a fantasy player, I think the balanced schedule is the most interesting, especially when you're talking about draft champions where you need a whole lot of depth, you're drafting a bunch of crappy pitchers. It's true that the schedule is factored into most projection systems, but when you're drafting 15 to 17 starting pitchers, it's nice to know that Kyle Gibson isn't going to face the Yankees and the Blue Jays as much as he would in seasons past. So for a lot of those kind of back-end starters, you're picking and choosing your matchups, when you're going to actually put them in the lineup. And knowing that they aren't going to see as much tough competition just in terms of how you're going to use them, I think that's probably the most actionable thing on here for me.
Right. I'd agree with you, Russell. I think number one is the balanced schedule. I had them ranked. I said balanced schedule one because maybe it is factored in the projections, but I don't really know the ingredients of those projections. So I'm going to do it myself. And especially when you're looking at FAB and you're looking at what's going to happen in the next month or so, next four starts. I think that's really important, really interesting. Second one, I said the shift impact on hitters. I think that's going to be impactful. I think the pitch clock on stolen bases, I think it's going to be impactful in terms of like, yeah, it's going to increase the stolen bases, you'd think. I think most people agree with that. But who are going to be the biggest beneficiaries? Because there's going to be different segments, as Steve alluded to, the Rabbits. So I think guys like Machado and Goldschmidt, those are two guys that aren't actually really fast, but they're smart and they steal smart. And you've seen they know where to steal. I think those are the players that my gut says might just tick up. I wouldn't be surprised to see Paul Goldschmidt steal 20 bases this year, to be honest, or Machado.
It wasn't listed, but I actually think that's the biggest thing. The pickoff limits.
That's what I mean. The pitch clock on stolen bases. That was.
Yeah, oh, okay.
So you think that's the biggest one?
I think that's the biggest one. Yeah.
I have that at three, like in terms of global impact, I have that at three. And then the shift on pitchers, I have at four. And the tempo, it is like Steve said, it is interesting. Like you hear everyone talking about Kenley Jansen, but how do I apply that? It's probably impactful. In the grand scheme of things, but how is it impactful to me? Like, how am I going to go about and strategize for that? Yeah, all the relief pitchers are pretty bad in terms of tempo. So what am I going to do? Not draft relief pitchers? Like, my hands are really tied right now. I can't really do anything about that. So it's sort of for me that it is what it is. Like, yeah, there's going to be impact, but in terms of like how it's going to impact my preparation, nothing. And then the base sizes, I think, are the last. I don't think that's important. So let's move on to listener questions. And again, another tip from Cerebro when he was on the podcast. Let's get right to the listener questions. Let's get to what people are asking. So let's get to these are for Steve. Steve, this is from Ben Gansenberg. Thoughts on Lance Lynn bounce back? We just talked about him. What are your thoughts on Lance Lynn, Steve?
Yeah, Lance Lynn kind of bounced back during the season. He had that he got injured right out of the chute. He had that knee injury he didn't see coming. Pitched horribly for half the year and then kind of rebounded with a resounding recovery right there. So I think he sticks on that path. I think he's fine. I think it's how you value the White Sox this year, because he's kind of just a steady player. You're looking for wins there. So the White Sox, they got some changes. How much will they miss Abreu? Andrew Vaughn, how's he going to fare? You know, a full year out of Eloy might make them potent. Lance Lynn, good solid, good win potential there if you like the White Sox. I kind of do. So, you know, good third starter if you can get him there.
Right on. Anyone else have any comments?
Yeah, I don't hate Lance Lynn. I was just using him as an example.
You just hate it. You just hate that he's out of shape.
He's just got a big gut, right? Like, I don't know.
That's fine. That's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. David Wells. Like, David, we've seen it happen. Hey,
you know, Mark Burley was a Burley boy. He pitched up with tempo.
Okay. Is Jonathan Aranda playing? This is another question from Ben. He's trying to get all those questions in. Is Jonathan Aranda playing a role for Tampa Bay? Steve.
You know, everybody seems to play a role for Tampa Bay. They find a spot for everybody. The one thing about their roster is how clumsy it's compiled. Got a bunch of guys with no options, like Siri and Vidal Brujan, and Aranda and Parades are kind of battling at first base, you know, maybe in a platoon situation. So I kind of feel like there might be a trade coming there in some way. You know, just the way that's structured with so little flexibility. But, you know, right now they got a Randa. I'm using roster resource. You know, I think that's kind of the go-to move there.
Yeah.
A Randa listed as the strong side of the platoon at first base. You know, I guess he didn't pan out at second, fielding more of a bat first guy, but. You know, they got a lot of mouths to feed there, but
that's true.
If he gets a chance, I do like him, you know, he'll hit.
Graham, you're a prospect guy. What do you think about Aranda?
I love him.
Really?
Yeah.
Should I start the DC that we're in right now?
Sure. It's not a big deal. I just think he has, like, going back to batted ball quality and all that. He does a lot of that. He hits the ball really hard. I mean, you have to know what you're buying, right? Like, it's the race. He's going to be platooned probably with Paredes. I don't know. The thing is with these Rays guys is they have so many more coming up behind them. So you have to know it's very sink or swim.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, what did he hit when he came up last year? He didn't hit very well. I know if you watched his at-bats, though, because it felt like he was always playing against the Jays, that he was a tough at-bat. But I think he hit like 200 or something. He wasn't great in his limited exposure. But, you know, if he gets another 100 at-bats and he's not producing, like, it wouldn't surprise me to see Curtis meet up or someone like that.
There's just so many chefs in that kitchen. Based on what you said about Aranda and Mead, and you got Manzardo, and you got Lowe, and you got everyone there. Like, does that really basically screw over Paredes? Like in terms of like short side platoon best?
Yeah, I think it really limits his upside.
So when Gialdi was drafting Paredes and all these gladiators, would you have stopped him?
He never asked me.
I think it was him. Maybe it was someone else, but I think it was him. Anyways, next question from Ben. His third question is Kalenic finally due? Steve, what do you think about Kalenic?
Gosh, he's always due. You know, I think it might just be baby steps this year. You know, they brought in AJ Pollock to kind of take the lefties from him. And I don't know, maybe the shift helps him. You know, maybe puts the ball in the gap there. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to believe how he's failed so miserably, you know, and he had that good run at the end of the year, although against maybe weaker competition, but he put up some numbers. I mean, I'm looking for some bright spots there, but I think at his draft price, you know, and maybe they baby him in there and he starts making these little headways, you know, I'm still in to a degree. I know he's a disaster, but he's a bench piece in a draft and hold.
And the thing is, he's not being drafted as a bench piece. He's being, if you want him, you're going to be drafting him technically as your starter. Maybe if you're confident in players you can get post round 23 that you believe are going to get starters playing time, then you can afford to take him where he's going.
Is he going as like a fifth outfielder?
Yeah, he's pretty much going as your fifth outfielder. I heard that. I think I heard the GM say that the best thing for the team long term is if like Kalenic and Taylor Trammell are good and are playing. So they're going to give him the opportunity, but he's also fighting for opportunities with people they also want to give opportunities to. So it's going to be very hard for him to get a full run right away. So I think you're looking at least initially, like a platoon bat. And then he's really going to have to knock their socks off to like get more than that. So it's really a tough one because unlike Corbin Carroll, who's somebody you think is going to get a full run right away, you're sort of starting behind the eight ball with Kelenic, albeit Kelenic has already failed and he's already failed and he's in, he might have that the pedigree sort of worn off of him, or not the pedigree worn off, but like the shine's worn off.
It's one of those things, right? Like he's so young to make the majors. It's so hard to write it off.
Yeah. It's a tough one. It's hard to take him as your starter in these leagues, but yeah, it's like, is he due? It's like, yeah, he's always due, right?
At this point in time, it's weird to say it, but like you're almost just hopeful that he's like a big league regular. Like I think the superstar ship might have sailed, but he's so young. Like it can totally seem like an idiot for saying something like that.
You know what? We all knew what he was until we all did it. So for us to again speculate and say we know again, it's like what do we do now? Like everyone was all over him, and then now we're like, okay, we're all wrong. Now are we gonna? We've already admitted our mistakes because we're collectively drafting him around pick 300. Is anyone gonna say otherwise? I don't know. It's just
yeah, you're talking about one of those sex pigs.
Hey Bjorn, how you doing? Steve, Bjorn just showed up. Sorry, I guess he must have got the link, but he's here. So Steve, meet Bjorn.
Hi Steve, how you doing?
Nice to meet you, sir. Doctor, I guess. How are you?
I am doing very good, thank you. Dr. Bjorn Masterson, MD. I have a question. Are you about 40 years old by chance?
I was at one time.
Okay. I was just, because I didn't know, because your name is Steve Meyer, and I was wondering if you were maybe in the witness protection program, because in 1996, Jeffrey Meyer interfered with the ball, and Derek Jeter was awarded a home run. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Okay, so we got. Well, let's
look. So, anyways, if you do know a Jeffrey Meyer, just tell him if a man in a van ever approaches him, his name would be Mr. DuPont or Tazawa, and says he wants to ask him some questions. Tell Jeffrey to run because he's a noted Yankee hater, so there might be some ill will there. Okay. But it's good to meet you, Steve. I'll listen now.
Okay, so we're trying to get through these questions here. So Ben from Detroit says, what's the preferred blend of boring vets versus prospects? What considerations are you making with prospects in general? He's got a lot of questions here, so let's just tackle that for now. So, Steve, vets versus prospects.
You know, it's kind of a tortoise and a hare type thing. You know, the boring vets are the tortoise. It's slow. You're going to win the race with that. So emphasis on at bats and quality. Boring vets, you know, but. Again, on the other hand, I'm tend to be a risk taker. You know, when you break the team down, all kinds of crazy risk, all kinds of injury stuff. So I like to have that prospect in there. You know, in a draft and hold, it's about the price tag. You know, there's going to be certain prospects that are going to slip. And sometimes you draft a little earlier where their role isn't quite known yet. It's a blend. It's roster construction. I'm looking for prospects where I can get them. You know, I'm a risk taker, and when we get into some of the team specific questions, you'll see that.
I can see from risk, your players.
I'm kind of excessive risk reward type.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. You have some teams hit and you had some teams don't hit. Last question is from this guy, Aaron, mid to late round targets that are undervalued. Do you have any, and you want some sort of name puns? Do you have any mid to late round targets that you think are undervalued? So I guess just so everyone knows, we're going to be drafting an all post 400 ADP team, but maybe you have, maybe you can give us one target that you have like before that you think is a little bit undervalued.
Yeah. Just kind of taking a look at a few of the drafts I got going on right now. See if anything jumps out. You know, it's just some of that player movement. You know, it's one of those things where you see a hit, like you'll see the Arias trade, and then immediately you'll say Alex Kirilloff, or you'll see, Edward Olivares getting a chance when they move Michael A. Taylor, you know, stuff like that, just responses to news. So guys like that, because outfield being, you know, a lot of names, but the quality dries up so fast. So for me, little shifts like that. So I like Olivares. I know he's been riding the frequent flyer between the minors and back. But, you know, Alex Kirilloff coming off the wrist injury. But stuff like that. It's people that suddenly pop into a role like that, you know. And that's the number one thing for me in draft and holds is just make sure I check the news before I make my pick. I mean, we got 2 to 4 hours to make a pick. Don't be in a hurry, you know. Check the news.
Don't tell Mike DeMelt that.
Yeah, I guess in that league, you do not have that much time.
No, you don't have that luxury with him. So let's talk about your overall win. So Steve, again, won the overall draft champions in 2022.
Zach, just one moment. I do have to jump off here earlier, but I wanted to talk to Russell for a moment. Russell, it's great to see you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bjorn. How are you?
I'm doing good. You are almost the spitting image of Bill Withers. Is he related to by any chance? Are you familiar with Bill Withers?
You know, I've heard that before, but no, I don't know Bill Withers.
Do you have a favorite song of his?
No, I don't, actually.
All right. Use Me is a good one. I recommend that. Also, Ain't No Sunshine. That's a great one. Lean on Me. I am a little under the weather, so it was good to talk to you guys a little bit. Shrimp Boat Captain, I see you here too. Be well, and I'll talk to you all later. Thank you, Zach.
Bjorn, are you under the withers?
Oh gosh, I missed that. Yeah. Oh, that is a very good pun.
Carl Withers from Rocky.
Yeah, exactly.
Play. Sounds enjoyable, doesn't it?
Take care of yourself. Don't wither away.
All right, thanks, Bjorn. Thanks for hopping in.
Yep, I'll talk to you all later.
Never stop the hop into our draft champions podcast. All right, Steve, overall win. So people go for the 80th percentile. People also look at the 90th percentile from an overall perspective. You averaged 89.2%, like for if you average all of the categories. You're one of only 8 teams in the top 100 to be below the 65th percentile in at-bats and below the 75th percentile in innings pitched. So you made this up. You crushed certain categories, stolen bases and ERA. You were elite in. You were actually more elite in those than saves, despite like all those hits you had on relief pitching, which might surprise people. And I want to ask you how you managed that, but you did well. You won the overall, but you didn't exceed the 85th percentile in runs, RBIs, wins, and average. So you did good, but not elite in those categories. But you did get Jose Leclerc, just to reiterate here, Ryan Helsley, Yoan Duran, Jorge Lopez, Bard and Munoz all after round 30. So how did you manage those closers? Like, what was your relief and starter pitcher mix certain weeks, and how did you decide who to pick? It sounds like my brain's hurting just thinking about this.
Yeah, you know, and it actually wasn't as non-traditional as it seems, because it was kind of like a Gallegos in round 7. And I think that was where he hadn't quite been named yet. I think Alex Reyes was still hanging around. And right. Then I followed up with Bednar a little later. So that was kind of my base.
That's something that we didn't post or we didn't talk about. You didn't wait on closers. You did draft closers in round 7 and round 12-ish, I think. So you did take your two quote-unquote traditional closers, and you double down with all of those guys I listed later.
Yeah, I mean, it's very painful to me to stop and draft a closer early, you know, the opportunity cost. I mean, I feel the pain. So I do like to launch those rockets late, but as far as the balance goes, I had a lot of injuries with the bats, but the pitchers stayed in there pretty solidly. You know, there was a kind of a core five guys, you know, Sandy and Gossman. Zach Gallen kind of fell a little bit in that draft just because of the injury concern. McKenzie, and then just the lottery ticket on Kyle Wright, who's just somebody I'd just been on for years, you know, and he just finally came through. Can't say that I was expecting that big of a jump, but, you know, kind of put things together. And then John Gray was kind of the swing guy there. So on a good week, those would have been the six. And then I was Gallegos Bednar, and I think I was Duran first. And then as I started believing in Bard, you know, I kept just, you know, denying that he was going to turn into a pumpkin, but he kept coming through. So I went there, and then Helsley, you know, took over right away. So it was usually six and three. I did have a couple weeks where I went four closers just because of the matchups on like John Gray, and he was nicked up kind of halfway through the season too. So there were times that I was kind of struggling to fill the staff. So
did you even use Andres Munoz at all?
No.
People are saying that he was their savior in not just DC leagues, but other leagues. He was their savior, and you couldn't even use him because your team is so good.
No, and one thing about the grind of it all, and it's kind of a Leclerc story. You mentioned Leclerc. The season had that crazy 3 days at the end, right? It usually ends on week 26. And like a horse race, you're trying to be in front at the end of that 26th week. And because of the lockout, they added those 3 days. You had that partial week.
Right.
And I feel like those 3 days aged me 3 years. You know, because it was such a close race. But the only time I had Leclerc in the lineup, the only time I put Leclerc in the lineup was that week 26. I was trying to play this abundance of closers, figuring they might not blow up.
Right.
So I kind of loaded up because I was just like, 3 days, this is chaos. So I just loaded up there. And I remember that Texas played the Yankees. They had a 4-game series. So I'm like, okay, 4 shots at it. And I remember Texas had 2 save opportunities in there. You know, I'm kind of watching the scoreboard, and, you know, any self-respecting fantasy owner, when they see a score that's 3 runs or less, what's the first thing you think? Save opportunity, right? Even before you look in, you go, that's my guy, that's my save. So Texas beats the Yankees twice in that 3-day set. And time number one, it's Mike Moore comes in, gets the save. Mike Moore. I'm like, okay, matchups. It's matchups.
Matt Moore?
Oh, what'd I say?
You said Mike Moore. I thought I was talking to Lenny Melnick for a second.
Oh, gosh. Mike Moore. Matt Moore.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
They come out again. And the second save opportunity that week was again Moore. Got the save opportunity. So I'm still looking for Leclerc. You know, he kind of disappeared. He was hot, and then he did not pitch in that week. And also Bednar was in a tie game and didn't pick up the win. And then he was in a save opportunity, and they didn't use him. And I go, you got 3 months to rest, man. Come on, pitch that game. But, yeah, he sat that one out too. So I had all the closers out there, but I think I only got one save. I think Helsley got a save. No way. That 3 days was rough, man.
So were you a 6-3 for most of the season, though?
Yeah. Yeah. Ronzi mixed like in there a little bit too, but they babied him so much.
Ronzi?
Yeah. He was just starting to find his stride. And I remember there was a day game. They brought him out there. He pitched 4 innings. I think they might've been scoreless innings, and he was rolling. And then the next inning, he's not in there. And then the announcer said, well, he was on a 55 pitch limit today. just out of the blue. So they babied him. And the hardest part about looking at the Ronzi,
he was like one of your most owned players.
Well, and the hard thing about that is I recall vividly that he went around the same time as Hunter Green. And for some reason I was on Ronzi. I just felt like he had was more assured of a spot. And I blew that Hunter Green thing. And I regret that one a lot. Hunter Green, of course.
He didn't do much last year. He just near the end he was good, but for like from a DC perspective, like he wasn't super valuable.
Yeah, I guess it's just the recency thing with me. You know, I just like Ronzi ended up getting babied. He was there from the start, but he got babied and didn't contribute. And then Hunter Green came on like a rocket. So,
yeah. So, Russell, you had a bold call last year about Spencer Strider. You going to make any more of those this year? You had Spencer Strider what on like five of your 20 teams or something like that? I don't know. Said something.
Yeah. Nobody really jumps out like he did to me this season. And when the first thing I do every offseason is I build the player pool I'm going to draft from. So I go through every team and I grab, every prospect who looks halfway interesting. And I'd never even heard of Strider. But you take one look at his minor league record and he crossed three levels and then debuted at the end of the season and was just lights out every step of the way. So you're like, he's going to be a part of the team. They obviously like him. I don't know what his role is going to be, but I just gave him, I think I gave him like 65, 70 innings or something. And he had good ratios and good strikeout numbers. And that was enough to be drafting him in the 600s in draft champions. You take someone like that and, a reliever who's going to do that is helpful. And it just worked out that he turned into what he turned into. I was drafting him in November and December, and then when spring training started and he looked like they were really going to stretch him out to either be a starter or a long reliever, then all of a sudden his value really started going up, and it just everything just kind of fell into place. My draft champions teams were a mixed bag last year, but I had one really good team that finished 25th overall, and he was on that team.
Nice.
It's pretty easy to.
So what things would you be looking for? What, like maybe if you don't have someone specific in mind, but what sort of traits or analysis would you be doing to find that a player like that? I don't want to say next Spencer Strider, but like a player with that. What are you looking for in terms of profiles?
Well, if you're looking at minor leaguers, I typically don't draft minor leaguers unless they've debuted. So in draft champions, at least, I'll take a stab on someone in a fab league in the final rounds because you can cut them immediately. But typically in draft champions, I want someone who's debuted already because I know that they are probably going to have some kind of role. A player who kind of fits that mold on the hitting side this season is Spencer Steer. I mean, he's not going anywhere near as late as Strider was, but he came up and got some run for Cincinnati and wasn't very good, but he is going to be a part of their plan this season. He's pretty cheap. I've been taking him as a third baseman on a pretty good chunk of draft champions teams. And, at his current cost, it doesn't really matter all that much if he works out or not. So those are the kind of players I like to take. In terms of profiles similar to Strider, Gavin Stone looks a lot like Strider did in terms of his minor league record. I don't think the swinging strike rates are quite as high.
Doesn't throw as hard.
And he hasn't debuted yet. So, you have no idea when he's going to come up, what his role is going to be. He's also being drafted a lot earlier than Strider was. I think people are paying for a lot of what could be possible. And I don't really like to do that.
People are getting smarter.
Yeah.
Jerry Harrison Jr. is an analyst. He said that that changeup that Stone has is just like it tunnels perfectly. He doesn't throw quite as hard, but it tunnels so well. And I don't know. There's some write-ups on him that he's still like not a finished guy, but I don't know. He's someone that's going like in the mid-30s in terms of rounds. So yeah, you're paying up for all these players. I think the information is becoming more prevalent. It's harder to the edge is harder to find every year.
Yeah. Also on the Reds, I've been drafting a lot of Mike Ciani really late. He came up at the end of the season, also wasn't very good, but you know, his minor league profile is pretty good. Double digit walk rates, his strikeout rates aren't really obscene, and there's a lot of opportunity in Cincinnati. I don't think it would take much for him to break through and have a semi-regular role, which is really all you want with an eighth or ninth outfielder.
Right on. Now, Steve, similar question. You hit on all those relief pitchers so well last year, especially in this one draft. And you didn't get them in all the drafts. Like some of them, that was your only share. But nonetheless, what sort of traits are you looking for? How did you identify those players last year? Because that couldn't have been an accident.
You know, thinking back on it, I have to preface this, that this particular draft that this team went in was in the midst of spring training. You know, you talk about when you drafted. So there was some spring training intel. You know, a couple of these arms, I got some news that they were throwing well, kind of high velocity, especially on Duran. There were some beat writers that were on him. And just say, I mean, he didn't have a role defined. I don't even know if he was making, I think he was going to make the team, but you know, he was dazzling in spring. Helsley was just kind of I considered him the backup to Gallegos. I was handcuffing there.
Right.
You know, and I
that makes sense.
So, and Lopez, that had to do with a news bullet, a news hit during my draft spot. That was, I guess, Cole Susser got moved. You know, Baltimore was kind of in flux, and they, I don't know if Susser was the proposed closer, and he got moved over to Miami. And I want to say somebody might have grabbed Dylan Tate, and then I went Jorge Lopez. So just opportunistic. But I you know, sometimes I'm just looking for those flawed pitchers that throw gas, you know. Tanner Scott, you know, Hunter Harvey.
Yeah, spring
training. Dylan Coleman, Jorge Alcala, you know, just I think the only thing we know is that closers are going to implode. We just implode, but we just don't know which ones, you know, and it's just sometimes you got to defy logic with it and just try to go with some skills. I guess I just like the gas, the hard thrower, somebody who might just get the opportunity.
Yeah. And I think Duran was a guy that I honestly wasn't on my radar at all until spring training. Started reading on him about his stuff. I saw people draft him. I saw Casey Chai was taking him in some leagues. And he only was on my teams that I drafted really late. Another guy with just an aside that I got to mention is Felix Bautista. I had him on a couple draft champions teams last year just because of I don't even remember what I was reading, but I heard reports. So I started drafting him, and he wasn't even in the player pool for most of draft champion season. So I saw that he got added near the end of the season. I was in a draft, and it's a funny because this guy DM'd me that it was in my draft. His name's Michael Schneider. And he said, sharp pick on Bautista. I put in a request. Like, we're in the middle of a DC. He said he put a request in a couple of days ago to put Felix Bautista in the player pool. So he's the guy that requested him to go in the player pool. And then I drafted him in the draft. So there's a lesson for you. If you're going to request someone that's not in the player pool to be in the player pool, wait till you're actually going to draft him. Because he's like, oh, he's nice about it. He's like, I wanted to wait to the 50th round to draft him. And I just took him, I think, like around 47 or 48. And he's like, nice pick, man. I'm like, well, thanks. Whatever. But it's just, I don't know. I just thought of that. I thought it was kind of funny. Bragging about my Felix Bautista picks. What else here? So looking at your player shares, Steve, I think you had, I have five of these drafts that I documented. On four of your teams, you had Ronzi Contreras, Nick Senzel, Byron Buxton, and Dalton Jeffries. And you had a couple other guys on three teams that are too many to list. But on that team that you won the overall on, the impressive run up closers is almost rivaled by the impressive run of injured players you drafted. LBJ is now Luis Robert Jr., so I call him LBJ. There's no more Lou Bob. We'll refer to him as LBJ going forward. Byron Buxton, Jesse Winker, Tyler Stevenson, Giovanni Gallegos, not injured, but lost his job. Jazz Chisholm, John Gray, who was off and on injured, and Nick Senzel. Those were all players that you drafted as starters within the first 23 rounds. So it's kind of like if you had told me that the overall winning team had all of those players on their team drafted prior to round 22, because Nick Senzel was the last pick in round 21, I would say no chance. But for every hit, you made up for it with – for every bust, you made up for it with a massive hit in terms of where they were being drafted. Jeremy Pena in round 23, Tristan McKenzie late, J-Rod you had on several teams, Zach Gallen, Jesus Luzardo. He was kind of hurt a little bit, but he still, when he was playing, it was worth it. Kyle Wright, Jake McCarthy, Vinny Pasquantino, Stephen Kwan. So really, it was a high variance team. So some people would say, you're like in quotes, oh, I'm drafting this team with the overall in mind, which is sort of a cliche thing now that we've heard it so many times. But like, you didn't get lucky. You won this, Steve. So talk about that. Defend your honor here.
Well, I'm a risk reward guy. You know, I'm constantly on upside. You know, it's non-traditional. I mean, that's just how I like to play the game. I like to have fun. I occasionally like the shiny new player. You know, it's unscientific, but and this particular draft was a result of no matter how I tried to set my KDS to get early to middle. And I think five out of the six drafts, I always got the last block of five. I was always 10 and off. So because I kept getting that same draft slot, it was kind of a frustration play. I go, okay, if I'm going to draft from the same pool again, I'm just going to swing hard in case I hit it. That Lou Bob Byron Buxton tandem, as ridiculous as it is, I just go, this is going to be the year. I mean, that defies all logic. I mean, I got what I paid for with those two. They both went down. But it was just like, I'm just going to swing hard. I'm going to, and the rest of the guys on that list, you know, Jazz Chisholm, that was just kind of a steals play, you know, because I don't know. I admittedly, that's a lot of risk, and I probably need to go to Fantasy Baseball Players Anonymous and confess my Nick Senzel problem, because that is the you know, that is my Charlie Brown trying to kick the football every year. I couldn't tell you what I see in that guy. I mean, the scouting reports, although if I had to defend him, which there is no defense for Senzel, is I feel like they mismanaged him with all those position changes and all that. You know, he's made of glass to begin with, but I don't know. He probably just should have been a third baseman or a second baseman and left alone there and just see what happens. But if you're in a draft with me, please draft him, you know, because I can't stop.
Speaking of that, and I'll jump ahead, but are you giving, like, I have this question written down for you. Are you giving into guys again, or are you giving them a second chance? What did I write here? Are you into guys again to give them a second chance, or like based on their upside still? And the guys that, like, I saw you drafted a lot, and you can comment on some, maybe not all of them. Well, the first one I've listed is Senzel. Like, these are guys that, like, you, there's a legitimate reason to be back in on them. And
no, I mean, he's riding around in a golf cart still, you know, we're a couple of weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting. So it's, you know, he's just been an incredible bust. And I just can't quit him. It's hard to admit that in public here, Zach.
Okay. Well, I've got a couple other ones here. Pache, Corbin Martin.
Now, you know, that Pache, Kevin Smith stuff. That was just trying to find some bench pieces that were going to get regular playing time that seemed to have maybe some diverse skill sets. you know, Smith, I guess, is probably a quad A hitter at best, but he was given the third base job. He had a big year in Triple A. It looked like he might make a little bit of a splash. I was just hoping he would be on the bench in case I needed him. Little power, little speed. I know the average wasn't maybe going to be there, but he ended up kind of crapping that job away. And then Pache, you know, he's a defensive player. I thought maybe that was some cheap speed, you know, kind of the same thing Ruiz is going to do today, but Ruiz has got that gig now, potentially. But I thought that'd be some cheap speed. I don't think Pache has much of a role, if anything, maybe a defensive replacement, maybe a pinch runner.
Ruiz looks like somebody that's going to be up your alley this year. The risk reward play.
Say that again.
Ruiz looks like somebody he'd be up your alley.
Yeah. You know, that is my kind of play, to be honest with you. You know, if you end up with like your first couple of outfielders being like a Jordan and stuff like that, you're looking for that speed. I don't know, because Mondesi kind of thing. I mean, what do you think of the Mondesi trade to Boston? Fresh starts. I mean, can he produce a little bit?
What do I think?
Or is it just health related?
I don't know. I think it's just like, for me, it's always been the health and, well, specifically last year, it's where he's going for the risk reward. He was always going so early, and I think it was just too much of a risk for what his range of outcomes were, where he was going. So he was off my board then. Then last year, it was that combined with the fact that the tea leaves said that he wasn't going to be a full-time player. So again, he was going way too early for me. Now he's going even later. So there is the health, and you do have some quotes from the Red Sox saying that they're not even sure he's going to be ready right away. And then they said, I think the quotes were that I could pull up some of the quotes. Actually, I probably have them right up here.
I think when he was a Royal, though, like nobody really expected him back for the first month.
So the Bloom said, we really like the upside of this opportunity, thought it made sense. Whether he's on time or not, we're expecting him to contribute for the bulk of the year. But as far as how we look at our shortstop situation, it doesn't change anything about where we're headed and the opportunity in front of Kike. So when Alberto is back, we know, given his track record, I don't think we want to put too much on him. He'll be part of the mix. We'll bring him along the right way. We'll take care of him. And him being part of the mix will make it easier to take care of everyone else. So that's telling me two things. One, he might not be ready right away. Two, he's part of the mix. So I don't think they see him as a starter. So he's still, the playing time's in question. The health is in question. The price might be right. So like this year, I wouldn't say I'm completely out on him. I have not drafted him yet. But I think, again, you might be wish casting if you're drafting him. Any thoughts on that? Anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you, Zach. I don't have any shares of him yet, but you know, I projected him for 400 plate appearances, so I've baked in him missing a third of the season, even before that news. And so in my drafts, his price is starting to move so far back that he's on my list when it gets there, but I just haven't done it yet, so I probably won't either.
Yeah, I kind of want to build my team so I don't need to take him, but I don't know. I admit it is kind of a bias for me because I've been off him. He's just a guy that I'm just anti that profile. And it's funny because Ruiz is kind of the same thing, like to a degree. Yet he's going earlier and I'm not as disinclined. What's the word? I don't know. I'm more inclined to take Ruiz than want to see at their cost. So where were we? Are we doing anything else? Do you want to get into our post 400 draft game where we're all gonna go position by position and do an all post 400 ADP game or team? I don't hear any. Forever hold your peace, boys. All right. So let's start a catcher. So post 400, we'll use DC ADP from January 1st onward. I'm not gonna I'm not going to check, so you can cheat if you want to. But let's talk about catcher. Steve, we'll start off with you.
Well, I'm gonna go for a post-hype play here. You know, this particular season has given us a lot of fresh offensive first catchers. You know, you got Endy and Ohapi and Bo Naylor being added to the pool, and somewhere hidden on the utility is Francisco Alvarez. But I'm going to go for a post hype. I'm going to go out to Slam Diego. What about Luis Campusano? You know, I when you look back at the rookie grades on stuff, he might have fared pretty well with some of the shiny new toys coming in now. Nola is not exactly an immovable object. You know, if Campusano comes up, gets hot, he could carve out a nice role there. Perfect third catcher. Good second catcher for you if you punt catcher entirely and you just need that upside. So I'm looking at Campusano this year.
Okay. Russell, do you got one or two? Did you do one or two, you guys?
Are we doing two?
I don't know. It's up to you guys. Steve, did you have one or two?
I'll throw an irrational one. I'm an irrational player. You know, I like Sam Huff as a deep play, you know, just somebody who has been kind of a prospect for quite a while. I know he's blocked by Garver and Jonah Heim, but he's big time power. If he could find a role in the lineup somewhere, I think he could do some damage, you know, maybe late in the season, but just kind of an upside play for a fourth catcher.
Yeah. I wouldn't be afraid of a Jewish catcher in front of you. In Jonah Heim. Russell, what about you?
Okay. Let's get things started off with the right stroke. And I'll take Reese McGuire, starter for Boston. He's going to have plate appearances. He's not really going to hurt you anywhere, even though he's not going to do a whole lot. Perfectly acceptable batting average for an in-game catcher, I guess in our case, a starting catcher. And then I guess for my second one, I'll balance him out with maybe a power bounce back from Zunino.
Nice. Graham, I know you're like about to start a draft.
Yeah. I'll drop out when I need to.
Okay. So you can do, you're more than welcome to play this game.
Catchers. I hadn't given it this much thought, to be honest, but I'll go with Gary.
Gary.
I hate Gary. Like I just always have, mostly because he's a Yankee. But it's insane how cheap he is now. He's creeping up. He was rumored to be signing in Giants land there, but just I don't know if he's your third catcher. I've drafted him a couple times as that, and like, you know exactly what you're getting for the most part. There were some funny quotes from his agent being like, he took last year to get like mentally right from the anguish that was his breakup with the Yankees or something. So I don't know if you want to believe that, but I think he's going to hit 20 home runs and hit 200. Like, I don't know. It's fine.
I don't mind it. All right. I have 400 post 400 team prepared as well. And I'll bleep out all of my picks, and then I'll post it on the Patreon, unbleeped out. So, and I won't go into detail. I'm just going to, because just in the interest of time for my picks, I won't explain them. I'll just list the players. So the players I had at catcher were Campusano and Alfaro. And those were my catcher picks. All right, Steve, let's go back to you for first base.
First base, I'm going to try a change of scenery play here. Let's go with G-Man Choi. He's in that vaunted Pittsburgh lineup now, but I'm joking. But if you look at the top half of the lineup, you know, O'Neill Cruz, if Brian Reynolds sticks around, Key Brian Hayes, there could be some traffic on the bases. Choi had an elbow injury last year. He hit like 280 in the first half and then kind of sloughed off quite a bit. Could be injury related. I think he's had that fixed. Hitting in the middle of that lineup, strong side of a platoon at worst. I'll take my chances on Choi.
All right. That's a well-backed up reasoning. Russell.
I'm going to go with Jesus Aguilar. Newly signed in Oakland, he's got a starting role. Zach, you know this, when you do a high volume of drafts, you can kind of see when people start thinking that a player is not going to sign, he just falls and falls and falls and falls and falls. And then all of a sudden he signs and his ADP is like 250 spots later than where he should be going. So if you're drafting in February, you should be grabbing Jesus Aguilar everywhere you can. It's just a huge value right now.
Right. Graham?
First base, hey? This guy, hey, like...
First base, A. The hoser? Who do you want?
Fucking give me some Lamonte Wade Jr.
Lamonte, is that how you say his name?
I don't know.
You gave him an A? Lamonte?
Lamonte. He's going like, what is this? 592 I got here? I don't know. What's his face? Farhan came out and said that they're hoping for big things out of him this year. He's a platoon bat, but it's so cheap. Like, I like Lamonte. He's not too old.
Fair enough. All right. My guy is Eric Hosmer.
Gross.
Well, I think all of those picks are gross, except I actually like yours is the least gross, Graham, because like he was going like pick 300 last year-ish. So, and they really didn't replace him at all. He might even have a bigger opportunity than he did last year. So, yeah, that's a good call. Second base. Let's go on to you, Steve, for second base.
I'm going to go with Michael Massey over in Kansas City. I think the Mondesi trade did clear the deck a little bit in the infield, even though he was, you know, questionable with the injury. I think the only competition left is Nicky Lopez, who best in a utility role anyway. Massey's going to give you a lot of help across the board. He's got a little pop. Some scouts call him an efficient base runner, which is perfect. You know, maybe the rule changes help a guy like that. Left-handed hitter. In case, I don't know, Roster Resource has him in a platoon, but I could see him playing every day. I like Massey in this role.
Right on. Okay, Russell, who do you got for second base?
Let's go Jonathan Scope, full-time player. I like him for a little bit of a bounce back, better dimensions in Detroit. So give me those at bats.
All right, Graham.
At bats, Aledmys Diaz. I have nothing else good to say about him. He'll get lots of at bats.
Okay. My guy is Emmanuel Valdez. All right, let's go to shortstop, Steve.
All right, now at this point in the draft, you're faced with a decision, two paths here. One path, and I'm going to go the other path, but the first path, you got the tempting prospects here. You got the Ellie De La Cruz in there. You know, he comes up in July. He supercharges your team. You also got Royce Lewis maybe coming back from an injury. You know, he had that little taste of big league action, look like the superstar he could be, you know, just in that short thing. He's hurt his knee a few times. I don't know with the Correa signing, they're going to put him back. But anyway, I'm going the other way. This is not my risk reward. I'm going to go with Dylan Moore. You know, kind of gives you a little bit of everything. Multi-position eligibility adds the outfield. He's got that little role carved out. I think Colton Wong is going to be strictly platoon. That's going to give Moore at least the action against the lefties. That means he'll pick up second base eligibility. He's going to give you that those elusive steals very late, kind of like a Swiss Army knife play here. And I'm high on Dylan Moore in this spot.
Well, breaking news, the Seattle Mariners just signed him to an extension. I think a modest one. I think I just glossed over it. I think it was like 3 years, $8 million, something like that. I don't know. They did sign him apparently. So you know, that means they're probably less likely to release him. So that's good. Not that you were concerned about that anyways, given how high you were on him. Russell.
I'm going to be a broken record here and go for the steady everyday playing time, JP Crawford.
Heard he might be platooned as well.
Well, we'll see.
With Steve's guy. Okay, Graham.
Shortstop, hey?
Shortstop, hey?
Hey. There's an H in there. Yeah, give me Jose Barrero.
Okay. I like that pick.
I know you do. That's why I said it.
Do you think he stole my pick?
No, I didn't think he was your pick. I just, it's funny just he's the not. Conversations we've had about him.
Like, I loved him. Yeah. 2 years ago, he was like, I was doing all these drafts, and I think he was on 100% of my teams up to a certain point.
When he was Jose Garcia.
Yes.
It's interesting, right? Like, he's probably in baseball, like top 30, 40-ish prospect. Like, the defense is going to carry. And he got promoted too early in the COVID year. And then last year, he broke his something. Hand, wrist. He was terrible. So, I don't know.
Is there a situation where, like, the current depth chart person who's on top is actually going after the guy that's like below them the depth chart and is in the minor leagues? In this case, Ellie De La Cruz and Jose Barrero. I granted, De La Cruz might not come up and play shortstop. He could play a number of different positions, but I can't even think of another situation where you have like Barrero going at like pick 550 and then De La Cruz going maybe 100 picks higher.
Osmer and Mervis.
Yeah. Okay. There's another example right there. So there's two examples.
Campusana, so, Nola.
Is Campusana going ahead of Nola?
No.
So that's not an example, is it?
Oh, sorry.
All right. But no, those are two examples. My guy at shortstop is Bryce Turang. So third base.
Thanks for representing the Brewers there, man.
Hey, anytime. Now I have to bleep that out too. Way to go, Steve. Making more work for me. All right. Go ahead.
Third base. This is another of my many irrational picks. This is a guilty pleasure. I look at the StatCast page every year and I can't get away from it. I always think there's going to be so much more and there never is.
Is it Jaime Candela? No.
It's JD Davis. Oh, I always think there's going to be more. I can't get away from it. He's in a playing time jam here. He's got a crunch. He's poor defensively. He's got strikeout issues. So I don't know if I see him at third base. That's probably going to be Flores. And if it's not, it might be David VR. You know, it's crowded there. So he's potentially on the short side of the platoon with Lamont Wade Jr. mentioned earlier, but it's just, he got traded there. He went on a heater and, you know, Gabe Kapler, he likes to tinker. Will he notice that JD doesn't really have pronounced splits? You know, he could potentially take one of these jobs and run with it. I'm just irrationally going to take the gamble.
Okay. So I like that. I like that call. Russell.
Mine is Jaime Candelario.
No way.
I liked him a good deal heading into last season. It was obviously a disaster. The change of scenery is going to do him good. So I'm betting on the bounce back.
G-Man? Did I just call you G-Man?
Yeah.
Are we at that point in our relationship? I've never called you that before.
That was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Sorry.
Post 500? Post 400?
400.
Fuck, man. Give me Hunter Dozier. Shout out to Gialdi.
Shout out to Gialdi. All right.
I have no real reasoning for it.
Cool.
He's going to get at bats. I don't know. Multi boy.
Hits the ball hard. He's a multi boy. Okay. My guy here is, we talked about him before in this podcast, is Spencer Steer. Just outside of top 400, but I'll take it. Gonna get playing time. Manager said he's getting basically the starter. Sorry. I said I wasn't going to go into detail. Okay. Do you want to do corner and middle or no? No? Okay. Outfield.
All right. I didn't make this selection just because I wanted to hear you and Graham repeat the name, but I went with James Outman. Would that be Outman with you guys?
Outman. James Outman,
but,
man.
But, you know, the news of Miguel Vargas maybe settling in at second base kind of interested me a little more in Outman, because the competition in the outfield is now Trace Thompson, a journeyman, Chris Taylor, potentially kind of more of a utility type thing, and retread Jason Hayward. So Outman's a good power speed combination, left-handed bat. He had kind of an up and down little visit to the majors. He struck out 7 times in 13, 14 at bats, but he did homer and hit 2 doubles. So he was, he made a big impact, and I don't know, he could very well start for the Dodgers if they don't trade for Brian Reynolds in the meantime.
Okay. How many outfielders did you have? Did you just have one? Are we,
I'll throw another one out there. Another guy I have trouble quitting, and this price is just too attractive for me, is Joe Adell. And, you know, he's another of these busts that I like to hang on to, but it's clear that his time with the Angels is done. You know, I mean, right down to signing Brett Phillips to take that last spot on the bench to close all doors. So I don't know. I just feel like he's going to get traded and a fresh start. You know, you look at some teams that are kind of have outfield possibilities. What if he goes to Colorado or Cincinnati? These are kind of unsettled teams, you know, in the outfield. So I hang on to hope that Joe Adell could be, you know, if he gets a chance at, I mean, he couldn't catch a fly ball last year. I mean, that's how messed up he was. And maybe a lot of that was mental. So I'm hoping for a bounce back and a trade.
I think he's going to need a trade or injury. He's going to need something. He's going to need some sort of inertia of some sort. So are you done, or are you?
And if I got to complete the outfield, I like the possibilities of Cleveland outfielder Will Brennan.
Yeah.
His competition is your favorite rabbit, Miles Straw out there. And Brennan was pretty solid at the end of the year. He does a little bit of everything. And as you know, Straw does one thing. So I could see Straw losing that job and Brennan taking over and running with it.
I could have seen that last year too. Russell, what you got?
All right, I'll start with Jesus Sanchez in Miami. He makes really good quality of contact, but he just hasn't really been able to put it all together at the major league level yet. I think at some point this season, he'll get another opportunity to do that, and maybe he can make it happen. I'll also go with, I'll go with Matt Vierling. He's in Detroit now. It's kind of the same situation he was in last season. You're just kind of hoping that he can work out a regular role for himself. And there were points during the season last year when he was useful. And I think Detroit brought him in with the intention of using him more often than Philadelphia did. There's plenty of opportunity there. So this could finally be the year that you know, he ends September as a regular player moving forward. And if I had to pick a third on the fly here, I'll go with Straw. I mean, right outside 400.
Oh, come on. Get off this podcast.
I mean,
Rick, get him up. Rick, how do we get this guy off?
You could shuffle him in on sections of the week where he's playing 4 games, maybe get a couple of steals here and there. The new rules might do him well. Yeah. I don't think he's a bad player. He's not a good baseball player on offense anyway, but I think he's a little bit better than he was last season. And
that's fair. That's a fair comment. Graham, are you prepared for this?
No. Outfielder, late. Yo, give me my boy, Jack Suwinski.
Okay.
I love that guy. Just pop. They're going to trade Reynolds. He doesn't want to be there. Their ask is outrageous, but like they're going to move. I think he's going to the Dodgers. And yeah, Suwinski's athletic. He could play center. The other guy, actually, now that I'm just digressing and going on a tangent, other guy would be Jiwon Bae. That guy's going late. He's got speed. There was a recent thing saying that he was going to focus on the infield, though. So, yeah, those are my two. Pirates.
Okay. I have five here. How many should I say?
I don't know. Do what makes you feel comfortable.
Okay. I have Nick Senzel in here. I know he's hurt. Got you, Russell. And then I'll go with our boy Corey Jolks. Don't want to say him. He's going to get bleeped out anyways. And I'll go with Trevor Larnach. All right. Yeah. Are we doing utility or no? No.
No.
All right. Let's go pitching staff. You can, Steve, you can tell me as many guys as you want.
Well, I have
but throw, two. But throw in on my... a relie- make sure one's a reliever because that's what everyone wants to hear.
All right. Well, I got two on the starting side. Risk reward profile again. I like Cade Cavalli. You know, this is a guy with multiple potential plus pitches. Big, strong guy. One kryptonite though is command and control, and I know that's a big one, but you know, again, can a guy with the natural tools figure it out on the fly? He looks like he's going to slot into the rotation from day one. You know, maybe I don't roll him out there until he figures things out, hopefully, but big arm, low pressure situation in Washington. You know, maybe he makes something of that. I like Cavalli. Another guy I'm interested in, this is more of a swingman, just could do anything. Out in San Diego, Adrian Morjon. You know, this is a left. You want to talk about an arm that's got low miles on it. You know, he's been around for 5 or 6 years. I think he's got 200 innings total, you know, and he was considered before Lugo got over there as maybe a fifth starter position. Throws hard from the left side. He could fit in anywhere. Could give you good quality multiple innings in middle relief. If Hader were to self-destruct, you know, he could find himself in the closer mix or the high leverage. He's not going to give you a lot of innings, but just an interesting arm.
Okay. Reliever.
You know, I'm sticking out in DC. Hunter Harvey has been a closer in waiting for quite a while. You know, he was injured a lot in Baltimore. And you know, he actually comes from a closer family. I said Mike Moore earlier, and that was a pitcher for the Mariners back when I was a kid instead of Batmore, but Brian Harvey during that same period pitched for the Angels and the Marlins. He had a couple of 40 save seasons. So Hunter comes from good stock. He throws the gas. His only competition is Finnegan. And you know, that's a piece that could be traded off if he doesn't fail to roll away anyway. Hunter Harvey's ready to go if he gets the opportunity.
It's a good call. Russell, I know you got to go soon, so you can give me your pitchers and you can peace out. Find Russell at Armchair Roto, right?
That's right. I just realized I've been looking at the ADP since October, so I apologize, everybody. For a starting pitcher, I'm going to go with Waka. He had a good season last year. He's one of those guys people aren't confident in drafting because he's not signed, but he's going to sign somewhere. As soon as he does, he's gonna shoot up the ADP a pretty good amount. And for a reliever, let's see. I'll go with I kind of like Carl Edwards Jr. He's a decent arm in Washington. Kyle Finnegan's the closer right now, but it's not difficult to see the opportunity popping up there for someone else. Maybe Finnegan pitches well and gets traded. And Edwards is one of the few competent arms that they actually have. And I could see him grabbing 8 to 10 saves towards the end of the season.
Okay. So Russell, I don't know if you have to leave, but you can leave at any time. Appreciate you coming on. You were Steve's pick to win.
And he totally delivered. So it was a pleasure to meet you, Russell.
That's awesome.
You too, Steve. I appreciate it. It's very nice to meet you. And Zach, thanks for having me on.
I feel like Cupid here, matching you guys up together. All right. Thanks, Russell. Graham,
do you want to do I want to give a pitcher?
Pitchers.
Let's see. We're going Blue Jays.
No?
Sure, go ahead. We're not going Blue Jays. All right.
No, go ahead.
This is crusty and nasty. You say Kikuchi. Give me that.
Oh, that's worse than Miles Straw.
It's so gross. It's so gross. I don't know. I think there's something there. And
the Jays are serious. They're serious about competing. They're not going to let him be the fifth starter.
But are they, though? Like, they haven't committed.
Are they paying him? What are they paying him?
They gave him, like, a three-year contract. Jesus. Like, I think he's the five to start at least, and he was striking guys out like crazy when they stuck him in the pen. I wonder if they do like a weird three inning like Frankenstein fifth spot.
He's shaking his head no.
But I think I don't know. I just they paid him too much money, man. He's gonna start.
Hopefully not. I'm not looking forward to that.
I don't really want to watch it. And then just to piggyback off that, give me Nate Pearson.
I can get on board with that.
I don't think he's going to start. I think he's basically going to do what I just described with Kikuchi. He's going to do two and three innings, and he was throwing gas at the Winter League. And if he's healthy, he'll throw, 80, 90 innings, which if you're getting him pick, 600, 550, like that's pretty good.
Just an update on it for everyone who's listening. Graham's spouting up a terrible post 400 pick in Kikuchi while you're hearing all his picks go off. He's in a live draft.
Oh, I gotta mute that. Hey,
probably.
Oh, sorry. I'm gonna draft.
I've sort of just gotten used to it, but I think like that's for everyone. That's Graham's doing a live draft during this podcast.
I'm gonna draft Lance Lynn because I trashed him earlier and.
All right, man. You want to give any more pitchers?
No, that's all I got.
All right, I'll give a couple. Ryan Nelson, Hal Harrison, Bobby Miller, Michael Lorenzen, pitch mix last year, at the end of the year. Decent stadium now. Last guy I'll mention, and I'm bleeping all these out anyways, but. Russell was talking about Spencer Strider and he said, and I thought to myself, what pitcher went across all four levels last year, or at least three levels last year. And not necessarily made the major leagues, but somebody that's good. It's a start. Somebody that's going to start potentially somebody that went across all levels, had a high K rate. And that person is Quinn Priestier on the Pirates. And he's been very late. And you've heard people talk about him saying that he has like the makeup of someone like Alcantara. He has like Alcantara type stuff. And he's very much ready for the opportunity, he said. So there's a lot of good things I'm hearing about him, and he's not getting any hype. So that's a guy that it could be something. So Steve, thanks very much for coming on this podcast. Making your podcast debut. I think you did fantastic. I think you did a fantastic job drafting last year. You had a lot of success monetarily and I respect your game a lot.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thanks for putting up with me as a rookie here. I don't fancy myself as a hardcore analyst. I'm kind of just a risk reward guy. Have fun, love the game, and love the show, guys. Happy to be here.
That's pretty much how I describe myself as well. I don't see myself as an analyst. I probably draft too risky, and I just do a podcast because I want to talk to guys like you. That's about it. So again, Steve, thanks a lot, and text me anytime. We'll talk baseball, and good luck this season. Not too much luck, especially if you're in any of my leagues.
All right, thanks again.
Hey, are you going to Vegas this year?
Yes, sir.
See you. I'll see you there.